Chaim, you want to start? Okay. So in Masechta Megillah, the third perek, there's a lot about Kriyas HaTorah, which we read on Mondays, on Thursdays, and on Shabbos. And Kriyas HaTorah was established originally by Moshe Rabbeinu, and then Ezra developed even further, as we'll see. Now, the Mishnah at the beginning of the third perek tells us that B'sheni u'b'chamishi u'b'shabbos b'mincha korin shlosha, that we have to read on Sheni, on Chamishi, Shabbos, Mincha, three people come up to the Torah. Three aliyahs. Three kruim, as we would say. So the Gemara wants to know, here on Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, whether or not there's any significance to the number three. Why three? So the Gemara says, Hani Shlosha Keneged Mi, what are these three kruim? Amar Avasi Keneged Torah Neviim Uksuvim. The Torah can be divided up into three segments. Rava Amar Keneged Kohanim Leviim Yisrael.
And in first opinion, maybe we should read that from the Torah Neviim Uksuvim.
Ah, that's right. You're right. We should get a sampling of each.
Yeah.
But I guess he's just saying that they were sacking three kruim, and the three kruim symbolize Torah, Neviim, and Ksuvim. Not that we have to read from each one, but you're right. It would make logical sense that we should get a representation, a sampling of each of the three. But according to Rava, we really want to call up Kohanim, Leviim, Yisrael. One Kohen, one Levi, and one Yisrael. And that's going to give us the number three. Now, the Gemara goes on to say the following. After having established these two opinions, it says the following. Elohad de Sani, Rabbi Simi, we have a brice of Rabbi Simi, Ein pochasim me'asor psukim bebeis hakneses. That when we call up three people, from the totality of those three kruim, we need to read a minimum of 10 psukim, no less than 10 psukim. And then the Braisa adds another chiddush, that Vayidaber, when it says Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe, Lamar, which is a pasuk that repeats itself throughout the Torah, Olil min haminyan, that's also included in the 10 psukim. And then the Gemara says, Hani asara keneged mi, why 10? 10 psukim. And the Gemara goes on to present a few different opinions. Like, for example, one opinion is it's keneged the asara sandibros. And then the Gemara has an opinion that it's keneged asara ma'amoros shenivra b'ena olam, right? God created the world with 10 ma'amoros. I mean, various opinions as to what the significance of the number 10 is. Now, we want to look at an essay. He asks a question here in the Gvuris Yitzchak. Tzorech Iyun, Lama Rav Simi Hishmienu Devayidaber Ola Leminyan Asara. Why, when it gets to the Minyan Asara, that we need 10 psukim, he adds this chiddush that you can count Vayidaber as part of the Minyan. And we have a minyan called Gimel Psukim, right? Each one of the, right, we called three people. And each one of these three people has to read at minimum of three Psukim. What about Vayidaber? Is that Ola Leminyan Shlosha Psukim? We have two minyanim. We have one minyan of each of the three kruim. And then we have a minyan of the total number after all three kruim. So the first minyan is Gimel Psukim. Each one of the kruim has to read three psukim minimum. The second minyan is 10 psukim. So Rav Simi points out that when it gets to the 10 psukim, then we count Vayidaber. But when he gets to the three psukim that each one of the three olim or kruim have to read, he doesn't mention that Vayidaber is included in the minyan. That's question number one. Question number two, my Rabusa, what is he telling me that Vayidaber is olam in a minyan? It's part of the Asar Pesukim. Vayidaber is a pasuk like any other pasuk in the Torah. Why is it worse than any other pasuk? Now Rashi tries to answer this question, and Rashi says that what's the chiddush of Vayidaber? Rashi says, Afal pisha ein lilmod mimenu klum, that we don't derive any conclusions from this pasuk of Vayidaber. And the question is, what does that mean? Vayidaber is a pasuk like any other pasuk. It's a verse in the Torah. What is the point here of this Rashi that he says that we don't learn anything from Vayidaber? What do you mean by we learn? The Torah is telling us that Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe, that Hashem commanded Moshe.
Sorry, mate. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, you want to join?
But at least I brought you gifts. You would like one.
Oh wow. Thank you so much. I'm going to say the shiur, so I'm not going to be able to enjoy your gift. So let's just review what we said until now for those who maybe came a little bit late. You'll be able to you'll be able to link into what we're saying. The Mishnah establishes that with regard to Kriyas HaTorah, when we read on Monday and Thursday and Shabbos Mincha, we require two things. Number one, we have to call three people up to the Torah, a minimum of three people. And number two, that each one of those three people has to read at least three psukim. The total number of psukim that they all have to read is 10. So the Gemara tells us that there are different opinions as to why we have to call it three kruim. What is the significance of number three? So one opinion, which is Rav Asi, he says it's keneged Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim, and Rav's opinion is that it's keneged Kohanim, Levi'im, and Yisrael. Okay, that's point number one.
So what's that in English?
Well, the people of Israel today divide up into three groups. There's a Kohen, there's a Levi, and a Yisrael. So the three groups, so we have to read three verses from the Torah. And the number three corresponds to these three groups of people that make up the people of Israel. Now, Rav Simi goes ahead and tells me another chiddush. If the total number of verses that have to be read is 10, then we can count the pasuk Vayidaber in the minyan of 10. Vayidaber is a pasuk which Rashi says doesn't teach us anything. It's just Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe. God spoke to Moshe. Doesn't really have any. It's very short verse. So we're trying to understand, what's the big deal here? You need 10 verses, right? That's number 10. The Gemara is going to offer many different possibilities as to what the significance of number 10 is, either because God created the world with 10 enunciations, or because there are 10 commandments in the Luchos. Various opinions as to why the number 10 is chosen. But now the Gemara says the Pasuk Vayidaber Moshe has to be included in the 10. Why would I think otherwise? I mean, it's a pasuk like any other pasuk. So Rashi says it doesn't teach us anything. Well, it teaches us that God transmitted the Torah to Moshe. I mean, we have to know that.
I think it's important because the command is where it came from.
Correct. We have to know where the Torah came from.
It's not some guy came and wrote a book.
Right. So I have if anybody wants, I made these photocopies. You can see I stapled together a few pages. And if you want, again, it all depends on what your level of reading skills is. But if you can't read the text, I'll try to, as best as I can, to present it in the holy language of English, which is not so holy, but... But for those who do like a text, we're up to the second paragraph on the right column, which is Venira. You see that? I'm just curious to know if anybody is following the text. I know as we go along. Yes. Okay. So he quotes he quotes the Shulchan Aruch here in Aruch Chaim. Now this is very interesting. The Shulchan Aruch paskins that on a daily basis, what we read is every morning Parshas HaTamid and the Brisa of Rabbi Yishmael. Now let's understand. The Parsha of Tamid belongs to what part of the Torah? Torah Shebichsav or Torah Shebalpeh? We have two Torahs, the written Torah and the oral Torah. No, the Parsha of the Tamid is straight out of Sefer Vayikra. That's the written Torah. And now we have the Brisa of Rabbi Yishmael. That's already Torah Shebalpeh. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins that the reason why we want to read this on a daily basis is so that every single Jew will touch all these bases, so to speak. In other words, his daily curriculum will include both Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebal Peh. So you'll start with the Parsha of the Tamid, which is Torah Shebichsav, that's the written Torah. Then you go on to read the Mishnah in Ezem HaKoman, which tells you, you know, which carbon can be eaten when, and so forth and so on. That's already Mishnah. And then you read the Brisa of Rabbi Yishmael about the, you know, different ways we interpret the Torah. That's already Gemara. So again, we want to get a little bit of a sampling, a dosage, so to speak, of each one of these three. And that's on a daily basis. Now, one of the super commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch is the Magen Avraham, and he writes the following. Nearly, I'll read it in the original. Dafka bizmanehem shahayu mevinim loshon hatargu. He says that the Gemara is written in Aramaic, and that's very good for those days, you know, I don't know how many centuries ago when they understood Aramaic, but we today don't speak Aramaic. And Einon Mevinim, we don't understand, is Sarach Lilmod Ulahavin. I guess he's saying you have to translate it into the vernacular. Diemloken Eino Nechshav Lilimut. It's not considered learning. Now, what does that mean? It's not considered learning. If you read Psukim in the Torah, or if you read a Mishnah or a Gemara, and you don't understand what you're reading, you know, today they have what's called transliterations. Have you ever seen it? They have these. I don't know if it's Art School, one of those publications where you'll.
Interlinear.
What's it called? Yeah, interlinear. All these fancy things, but you don't understand what you're reading, like, unless you read the translation. Would you fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, the study of Torah, if you don't understand what you're reading? Anybody? Just give me a knee-jerk response. What would be your...
I think so.
You think yes? Anybody think no?
Only if it's Torah Tel Shavs, yes, Torah Sheval Pen.
Oh, excellent. Oh, Chaim, you're already... you can say the Shia tonight. I can go home. Yeah, what did you want to say? I'm sorry. I forget your first name.
Morris.
Oh, Morris. Yeah. Morris, and your first name?
David.
David. So Morris and David. Okay.
What did he say in English, please?
Yeah, well, he said in Spanish, so only I understood it because yo español, yo aprendo español. But anyway,
good, Mark. Impressive by your reaction.
But yeah.
I thought no, because you don't understand what you're saying. You know, the Kavanah.
You sold
right. Okay, so we have Brian saying yes.
I'll say yes.
Right? We have Mark saying no. Yeah. And now we have Chaim telling me yes and no. So let's explain what it
is. If you read the Hebrew, so is if you read the Torah in Hebrew, are you still benefiting even if you can't translate?
And you can't translate. You don't understand the word.
So
Mark is saying that it's meaningless.
Not the same way.
Brian is saying it's meaningful. And here's what Chaim has to say. What is your first name? Chaim?
Yes.
Do you have two names or just one name? Yes. Chaim. And how do they call you in Spanish? What do they call you?
Jaime.
Yeah? She.
That must be the start. You think that you're going to understand everything from the first minute. You'll never do anything because you'll never understand.
Listen to what Chaim has to say, because he says very well. Here there's a fundamental difference between the written Torah and the oral Torah. The written Torah has a mitzvah of kriya. Kriya means just to read it. The reading itself of the words is meaningful, and you achieve a fulfillment of a mitzvah. But in the oral Torah, which is Torah Shebal Peh, there the mitzvah is not kriya, but havana. Not reading, but understanding. So getting back to my question, if somebody reads the words, but he doesn't understand them, would he fulfill the mitzvah? It depends. If we're talking about the written Torah, then we read the written Torah. The written Torah includes all Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Ksuvim, the whole 24 books. But in terms of Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral Torah, here the mitzvah is Havana. We have to understand. So if I open up a Mishnah and I read a Mishnah and I have no clue what it says, I would not fulfill a mitzvah.
Which is most of the time.
Why? Because the Mishnah is Torah Shebaal Peh. It's the oral Torah, John.
But with the Torah, it's the written Torah, isn't that you're supposed to do Shtei Mikra and Targum? And the reason why you say in Targum is to understand it. So why is that possible?
So that's what we're going to get into. You should know, forgetting about for a second Shtei Mikra and Targum, when back in the day, when Ezra HaSofer took a whole cadre of Jews back to the land of Israel at the time of Bayis Sheni, when they were about to build the second Bayis, he instituted that the public reading of the Torah should be accompanied by Targum. And to this day, there are certain Yemenite communities that follow that tradition. We don't have it so much. Now, getting back to his point here, he quotes the Rav Shulchan Aruch, who says the following. Yesh lechalek, again this is on the bottom right, for those who like the text, we should differentiate between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. To be Torah Shebaal Peh, Mishnah or Gemara, im eino mevin, if he doesn't understand the explanation, eino nechshav limud klal, it's not study, and it's an exercise in futility. Aval be Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, and now we're on the top of the left column, he says, afal pish eino mevin, he doesn't understand even the translation of the words, he's a total ignoramus, he just never learned. Doesn't matter. He fulfills the mitzvah of v'limaditem, meaning with regard to Torah Shebichtav. So let me ask you a question now, and this touches on what Brian was saying before. At what age should a father begin to teach his child? How old is the child that you begin to teach the child Torah?
Five.
Why five? I'm going to tell you two. Why two? I mean three, I don't know. I don't know, at what age the children start speaking? I don't know, is it two, three? Some are late beginners, bloomers, they start at five. Nothing to get nervous about. I had such a situation in my family, not myself, but another member of my family didn't start speaking until the age of five. Of course, we were ripping the hair out of their heads, you know, but that's... So the Rama writes, as soon as the child knows how to speak, you teach them Torah. And the Rambam says you should start by teaching them Torah Tzivalon Moshe, Morash Kilus Yaakov. So the Rav Shulchan Aruch says, why are we teaching a child at such a young age? The child at 2 years old doesn't understand the Torah. And the answer is, we're teaching him Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah. And the written Torah, you don't have to understand. Even the recitation of the words is a fulfillment of the Pasuk, Ulimaditem Osav Espenechem, and the Torah adds, Lidaber Bam. Lidaber Bam means to speak the words of Torah. He quotes here a source for the Rambam back in the Sifri. The Sifri says, "V'limaditem osav misnechem lidaber bam mikan shekshetinok maskel lidaber." The child begins to speak, and then aviv midaber imo. Excuse me, lashon kodesh. His father should speak to him in the holy tongue, umalamdo Torah, and he should teach him Torah. So this is fascinating because the child is mature enough to read Torah, to speak Torah, but not to understand Torah. And even so, it's considered the mitzvah of Torah study, of Talmud Torah, because we're dealing with Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah. That's the Rambam in Perek Aleph, Mehilchos Talmud Torah, Halacha Aleph. We go on now to the next Halacha, Halacha Beis. And the Rambam writes that you have to teach your son Torah, you have to teach your grandson Torah. And not only that, if you're a chacham, if you're a scholar, you have to teach all the talmidim. Any student that you could possibly transmit the Torah to, you have to teach him. Afal pi she'eino banav, even though he's not his children. Now, in terms of the obligation of the father to teach his son, that's derived from the pasuk limaditem osam es b'neichem. So b'neichem here means you have to teach your son. Here the Rambam says, I have to teach anybody, even somebody else's son. But here the Rambam quotes a different source. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, Vishinantam livanecha. Now again, here too, the Torah says Levanecha, to your son. And yet here, the Rambam says Mipi Hashmua Lamdu, that they taught us in the oral Torah, the oral tradition, that Vishinatam Levanecha Banecha Elu Talmidecha. It's not your biological child, but rather it's your student. Shatalmidim Kruyim Banim. And in the Torah language, a student is called a ben. So now we have to ask the following question. We have two psukim, both of which mention the son. It says, Limanetam Osam Es Benechem. And then it says, Vishinantam Levanecha. Correct? Both of them say, teach your son. With regard to Limanetam Osam Es Benechem, we interpret that to mean literally, exclusively your son, your biological son. And the father has a special obligation to teach his son Torah. But with regard to the pasuk v'shinantam levanecha, here we're going to say that the talmidim are considered bonim, and you have to teach anyone. Why? Brian, are you with me? You're fading out on me, or phasing out on me? How do you say it?
I'm listening, yeah.
So again, you hear the question. In two psukim, it says bonecha. In one pasuk, we're going to say it means literally your son. That's called v'limadetem osam esbenechem. And mikan, that the father has a special obligation to teach his son. In another pasuk, it says v'shinantam levanecha. And we're going to say that means you're obligated to teach somebody else's son. And any Talmud who can learn Torah from you, you're obligated to transmit the Torah. Do you hear that, Brian? That's a heavy responsibility.
Well, it's Rebbe's responsibility.
Well, not just mine. I mean, every Jew. You know, you're also a chacham. You're also a, maybe you're the chacham for the manishtana. You know,
there's a
you know, in Yiddish, there's a funny phrase: the chacham for the manishtana. That's like a pejorative saying, the way of saying you're not such a big chacham, because the chacham for the manishtana just says, "My mother is also lachem." Like he just says, "Why are you eating this roast meat?" You know, on Leil HaSeder. In any event. So the question is, why do we assume that Vishinantam Livanecha does not mean your biological son, but it means your student, even if he's somebody else's son?
That's B'nai Yisrael, in other words.
Right. Any member of B'nai Yisrael who's willing to learn, you got to teach him. Even if it means going out to Efrat or wherever you have to go out to teach Torah, that's what you have to do. So the answer is very, very profound. And that is, because there's a difference between v'limadetem and v'shinantam. He says the following. In the case of v'limadetem, that word v'limadetem means to study Torah even if you don't understand the Torah. You just have to read the Torah. However, the word v'shinantam means she, you know, here you have to turn the page. Sheyu mechudadim v'ficha. That the word shinun in Lashon Kodesh, in the Holy Tongue, means that it has to be sharp in your mouth. That if anybody asks you any questions about the Torah, you'll be able to answer them. Here we're not talking about a mitzvah of reading, but rather a mitzvah of
understanding,
of havana. Oh. When it comes to the father's obligation, his obligation is to teach his son Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah. And we said before, the written Torah has a mitzvah of just reading the Torah. So the word Vishinantam is not appropriate. But when it comes to teaching someone else's son, here I'm not obligated to teach him Torah Shebichsav, but rather I have to teach him what? Torah Shebalpeh, that's Vishinantam. So therefore when it says Vishinantam Levanecha, the reference here is to the deeper understanding of the Torah, and that means Torah Shebal Peh. So basically, what's the relationship between a father and a son in terms of Torah study, and what's the relationship between a Rebbe and a Talmud in terms of Torah study? In the first case of the father and son, what kind of Torah are we talking about? Which Torah are we discussing? Torah Shebichtav. So the relationship between the father and his son is a relationship of Torah Shebichsav. The father is responsible for his son's Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah. Now, once the child graduates to the next level, he's ready, maybe at the age Chaim was set at 5, or whatever age he's ready to study Torah Shebal Peh. You know, when I was a child, they studied Mishnah with us when we were about 7 years old, something like that. And then Gemara, we started when we were about 8, 9, 10 years old, something like that. Fourth grade, I remember. So once he graduates to that level, now the obligation to teach the son Torah is incumbent upon everyone. Not just the father. It's not just the biological relationship of father to son. It's a relationship of Rebbe to Talmud. Because that's a relationship of Torah Shebal Peh. But that's only when the child is capable of understanding. Now, in the light of everything we discussed, how would you define or classify the mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah B'Tzibur? Right, on Mondays, on Thursdays, on Shabbos, we're reading the Torah publicly. Is that a mitzvah of Kriya, of reading, or is it a mitzvah of Havana, of understanding? Pashtus would be Kriya, because it's Torah Shebichsav. And if the audience knows what the words mean, that's great. And if they don't, that's also okay, because it's Torah Shebichsav. And we've already established that with regard to Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, there's a mitzvah of Kriya. All this is true from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu up to the time of Ezra. Ezra made a radical change in the nature and the purpose of Kriyas HaTorah B'Tzibur. He injected another element into the equation. What's that? Torah Shebal Peh, understanding the Torah. And that's what Ezra did when he advocated the requirement of Targum, that we have to translate the Torah. It's not enough that we what? Hello? That we read the Torah, we have to translate the Torah. Now, if you don't understand Aramaic, so translate it into a different language. That's the Takon of Ezra. The Rambam codifies in Hilchas Tefillah, Perek Yud Beis. We'll read the text. It's the paragraph that starts Vehine on the second side. Moshe Rabbeinu Tikein Lehem LeYisrael. Moshe established the Takonah. And he required you korim b'Torah b'Rabim. You have to read the Torah publicly, b'Shabbos, b'Sheni, u'b'Chamishi, b'Shachris. So in the morning on Shabbos, in other words, he did not establish a second kriya on Shabbos at Mincha time. That's going to come with Ezra, but he established three kriyas. Number one, Monday, Wednesday. I'm sorry, Thursday, and then Shabbos all in the morning. And why? Why Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos? Kadesh lo yishu shloshi yomim below shmias haTorah. In other words, we shouldn't go 3 days without hearing the Torah. So when you have Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos, you'll never go 3 days without Torah.
But that's in the morning.
And that's in the morning.
But some people do read in the afternoon.
Well, we'll get to Mincha in the afternoon in a minute. Right? Or Tainus on a fast day.
I'm up at 3:10, but I'll...
No, what?
I've been on a 3:10 Chabad. I read it in the afternoon.
They're reading last Thursday's Kriya. They didn't read last week. It's like I went to Davin and Sanz once in the Tanya. Yeah. So I said, what tefillah are they up to? I thought it was Myriv because it was... So they told me it was yesterday's Myriv. I'm just kidding. I'm being a little facetious. No, seriously, there's no such thing as Kriya in the afternoon. Again, now, if they missed the Kriya in the morning, you know, in Chabad that could happen. It all started in Leningrad, because in Leningrad it doesn't get light until about 11 a.m. You know,
so they didn't have a minion?
And they didn't have a minion, so they read it in the afternoon.
Okay.
But that's not the way it's ideally read. It's read in the morning. So this is as far as Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned. Now, the Rambam...
Why is it read in the morning?
Because we want to start the day with Torah. And the Rambam writes that you have to hear the Torah. Listen to the language of the Rambam. Shelo yishu shloshes yom below shmias haTorah. They have to hear the Torah. What does that sound like?
Torah
shebichtav. I mean, the Rambam doesn't say they have to understand the Torah. This is the limaditem, you know, on the basic level.
Maybe you've got the most energy for it as well.
Yeah, for sure. So he says the following. Mevuar, we understand that B'Torah Shebichsav, in the written Torah, Afal Pishen Omevin, he doesn't understand, he doesn't even translate the words, he still fulfills the mitzvah of Limaditem. And therefore he is Yotze, the Takonis Kriyas HaTorah, even though he doesn't understand what he hears. In other words, there's something about hearing the Torah publicly which penetrates into the person's soul, into his psyche, and it has an impact. It has an uplifting impact on the person, even without Havana, just by hearing the Torah.
And also, Rabbi, today when we read the Torah, you have a art scroll or something you can follow and understand.
Oh, so that's what we're getting now to Ezra. What I described to you was before art scroll. Believe it or not, there was a period of time before art scroll, and it's hard to believe that. And that was the period of time from Moshe Rabbeinu until Ezra. Ezra was the first art scroll guy. Okay? Ezra had a monopoly. He had a patent on art scroll. He became very wealthy, Ezra, from his patent on art scroll. They thought the first letter of his name was E, but it was really A. He was a Dr. A. Dr. Azra was his name. A for art scroll. So the Rambam says the following: Mimos Ezra, from the time of Ezra, what was the minog? Not just to read the Torah, but to read the translation of the Torah. Again, they didn't have art scroll back in the time of Ezra, so what do they have? Targum. Who wrote the Targum? Uncles. So they had Targum Uncles. And there was a separate person who was, I guess he was a paid worker, I don't know, it doesn't say what salary he got. He was called the Mitargim, or the Turgamon. So for example, amongst Yemenite Jews, there's a very common family name called Turgamon. Have you ever heard? If you meet a lot, every other, well, I'm exaggerating, but many of the families, they, you know, the Yemenite families are Turgamon, which is Turgamon, they pronounce. Why? Because they had a certain person who was in charge of translating the Torah and reading its Targum. What element of Torah are we now introducing? Torah Sheval Peh. Because as soon as you translate the Torah, in order to understand its meaning, that itself, by definition, is Torah Sheval Peh. So as Moshe Rabbeinu's takana was just hear the Torah. You don't understand it necessarily, but you hear the words of the Torah, that's Torah Shebichsav, that's called the Limanitem. Now, Ezra wants to jack it up by adding another variable. And he expands and enhances the cube to upgrade it to the level of Havanas HaTorah, to understand the Torah, and inject an element of Torah Sheval Peh into the Kriya. And Ezra Tikin Sheyavinu, that they should understand the Inyan HaDvarim Shekorim. Is the door closed, by the way? You have to slam it closed, otherwise he says that Ezra enacted the requirement, thank you David, of understanding the Torah. The afal gav sheyochol lotzeis ikar mitzvahs v'limanetem b'torah shebichsav afal shvishen ha-mevin, despite the fact that you could fulfill the basic mitzvah of limanetem by just listening to the Torah, even without what? Understanding the Torah. Mikol makom hareyesh od mitzvah, not just v'limanetem but also v'shinantam, and the mitzvah of shinantam means to understand the oral Torah, and therefore eino yotzei mitzvah v'shinantam rakim mevin machalom, the only way he can fulfill that mitzvah v'shinantam is if he understands what he's learning. And therefore Ezra insisted that we introduce Targum.
So what's the practice is continued?
I don't know. I'm not sure historically why it fell into misuse. What?
Because now we've got old scroll. You can just read it.
Okay, I hope that's true, that people are understanding the Torah reading. In you know, in some of the Kiruv organizations, and did you ever hear of, well, this is not from Spain, but from Mexico, but in America we have something called NCSY. Have you heard of that? So they have what's called Parsha highlights. They don't translate the whole Parsha, and they do it in smaller dosages. Not after every single aliyah, but let's say twice or three times during the course of the Kriya, somebody will get up and give parsha highlights. If you ever get the Torah tidbits from the OU, hey, that would be great if you're a Matargamon, you know, you want to do the Targum, but not in Aramaic. You could read out loud the Torah tidbits. You know, that would be a kiyum of Takanas Ezra. You would fulfill it. Ezra would be a happy guy if he knew about that. Now, how many psukim have to be read? What's the minimum number of psukim?
Ten.
So he says the following. That was the takana of Ezra. Back at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, All he had to do was read one single pasuk. There was no requirement to 10 psukim. Now, it turns out that we have to understand the significance of the number 10, and he says the following. He says that in terms of kriya, you would not have to read 10 psukim. Let's say, for example, if you wanted to call up one person to read the Torah, just one, at the time Moshe Rabbeinu, he would read 3 psukim. Or you could call up 3 people and each one would read 1 pasuk. Now comes Ezra and he says, no, we have to read 10 psukim, and that's the minimum. He says, what's the yesod? What bothered Ezra, moved Ezra, to institute this requirement of 10 psukim? Why is it enough if each person reads 1 pasuk and we get 3 psukim? And he says the answer is that in order to understand the Torah, you have to get a fuller picture. 3 psukim doesn't really give you a full understanding. Once you have 10 psukim, that's not a shir in kriya. As far as the shir kriya is concerned, 3 psukim will be enough to constitute a kriya. But if you want to understand what's going on, you need a minimum of 10 psukim. So in the last 3 words on the right column, going up to the top of the left column, he says, "Aval Ezra Shetiken." If you want to underline these words, Ezra Shetiken Sheavinu Mashikorim. Since Ezra's agenda was that we understand the kriya, therefore Tiken Asara Psukim Sheavinu Inyan Hakriya. Inyan means the whole subject matter. So you have 10 verses, that makes a subject, but 3 verses, that's kriya. That's just reading. So that would be okay if the mitzvah was only v'limanitan, meaning only Torah b'ksav, because you don't have to understand. So read 3 psukim and that's fine. And that was the situation from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until the time of Ezra. Ezra came along and he introduced another element and he required havana. We're upgrading the kriyas haTorah from the level of v'limanitan to the level of v'shinantam. And in order to achieve that goal, Ezra was compelled to introduce a requirement of 10 psukim. 3 psukim would be enough if the mitzvah was only kriya, but if we jack it up to a mitzvah of havana, then you have to get the whole subject matter, a whole inyan. You have to get a section, a segment. That's a makeup of a minimum of 10 psukim. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, Mark.
How can Israel just unilaterally change the?
That's an excellent question. How does Ezra have the authority to change the takana of Moshe Rabbeinu? And let me just sharpen up your question a little bit more. We have a principle that when an early court, a Beis Din, will institute an enactment, a later Beis Din, a later court, cannot undermine the original enactment unless it's greater in number and in wisdom. And we have no reason to believe, and it would be not true to say that Ezra's Beis Din, his court, was superior to that of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had the Shivim, the 70 Zekanim, the elders. So your question is very sharp. I would say the following, that there are 2 takanas here, and they don't exclude each other. It's not that the takana of Ezra undermines the takana of Moshe, but rather enhances the takana of Moshe. So we have 1 takana of Limadatem, which is Torah Shebichsav, that requires just reading the Torah and hearing the Torah without understanding it. Ezra now wants to make another takana. He wants to up the ante. He wants to say that in the vehicle of Kriyas HaTorah should achieve understanding of the Torah. And therefore he requires that they read 10 psukim and they add targum. So it's not that Ezra is in any way undermining or canceling the original takana of Moshe, but he's establishing a brand new takana that requires in the kriya not just hearing the words without understanding them, but understanding them. That's the best I can do, Mark. But your question is excellent. Now at this point, we want to come back to our original question. You may remember that Rav Simi in the Gemara here, Masechet Megillah, tells us that when you calculate the 10 psukim, you can add to the calculation Vayidaber Moshe El Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Lemar.
So we
you can include it. So I was wondering why did Rav Simi have to tell me that? I mean, Vayidaber is certainly a pasuk like any other pasuk. Now we can understand that. Because since Ezra required 10 psukim and targum, it means he shifted the emphasis from hearing and reading to listening and understanding. Therefore, the pasuk Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe doesn't give me a new insight. There's nothing that we learn from that pasuk. And that's what Rashi means, ain olamid. He doesn't teach us anything. So if the entire purpose of Ezra's takana was to achieve understanding, then this pasuk doesn't enhance your understanding. And therefore I might think I cannot calculate it and include it in the 10. Kamash Malan, that's what Rav Simi wants to tell us. No, that even Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe has a certain meaning to it. It's not just words. And we have to understand that this introduces an entire section of the Torah which was transmitted from God Almighty straight to Moshe Rabbeinu. And now we're up to a paragraph number Vehine, the second Vehine, number two on Vehine. On Purim, we read which parsha? Who remembers?
I have a parsha.
Which part of the Torah do we read publicly on Purim? We should get in the mood for Purim. You know, we're already past the halfway mark of Adar Aleph. We read the parsha of Amalek. Does anybody know why we read Amalek on Purim? Excellent. Haman was from Zerah Amalek. Now, I'm gonna throw you a curveball. If you can answer this question, you deserve a special Mishloach Manos on Purim. And how many psukim does the parish of Amalek constitute? Or is that the word constitute? How many psukim are in the parish of Amalek?
5, 6.
9. Why 9? Now we're in trouble. We just finished saying that the Takana of Ezra required a minimum of how many psukim?
10.
How could we get away with 9? And Tosis raises this question. V'im Tomar, he says, V'arei parshas Amalek leka elateisha psukim. V'yei Shlomer, he answers, Shani parshas Amalek desidra diyomahu umafsik inyona biyut. He says the following, that Parshas Amalek is different. Why? We're reading Parshas Amalek in order to understand that we have a battle against Amalek. That's in Yoni Dioma. That's what Purim is all about. Our battle against our enemies, against Amalek. Once we read the 9 psukim that set up a unit of Amalek, then that unit opens up with the fact that Moshe is called upon by God to gather the troops together and fight Amalek. It's 9 psukim. That's already a sidra diyoma. That's already a mafsik inyana. You already have a total unit. So again, if the shir of Kriya was 10 psukim, you didn't read 10 psukim. It tells us back to his question. But the answer is the 10 psukim is not a shir in Kriya. The shir in Kriya would be only 3 psukim. The reason we cry 10 is to understand. And in this case of Amalek, we get the message. Because the unit of this theme, of this motif of Amalek, is made up of 9 psukim. So we want to read those 9 psukim and convey the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek, of destroying Amalek, and that's what's in Yoni Dioma. That's what we have to do on Purim. So in his words, he says that HaKori B'Torah Lo Yifchesu Mishlosha Psukim. Oh, now he asks a different question. Okay, let's open up the Gemara in Masechta Megillah on Daf Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. Now we're looking at a Gemara let's see if I can tell you where it begins so we're all on the same page. It says the following. How do I tell you where it is? Amalot, let's see. It's 4 lines down from the top. Bayomar Rishon. Okay, now for this we'd have to know more about something called Ma'amados, which I'm not going to go into, because that would take us a full hour to discuss. There's certain reading that was specified for a public fast day. and there were a certain seder on different days. Anyway, on the first day that they read the parasha, let's say on Yom Rishon, they would read Bereishis and Vayehi Rakia, and it turns out that the Gemara says, Havina, but we have a question. Bishleima Yehi Rakia bi Echad, Ditlosa Psuka Havi. The pasuk about the creation of the Rakia has three verses. Ela Bereishis, but the parsha of Bereishis is Bishnayim. So how do we do this? So Gemara says, Chamisha Psuke Hava, Vitanya Hakari B'Torah LeYifchos Mishlosha Psukim. So we have now a parasha that's made up of five psukim, but we have to read a minimum of three psukim for each ola, a total of which is 10. Now, if you're going to call up three olim to read five psukim, then there's no way, no how, that each one of the olim is going to read three psukim. So the Gemara has a machlokas about this. Itmar Allah, Rav Omer Doleg. Rav says that the first Ola will read three psukim, and the second Ola will repeat the last pasuk that was already read by the first Ola, and in that way you'll be able to divide up the five psukim into three kruim. Shmuel Omar Posek. Shmuel says that the Rishon should read two psukim, and then half of the third pasuk, and the second one who gets the Aliyah, he should read the second half of that pasuk and then another two psukim. So basically, according to Rav, we repeat psukim to make up the number three. And according to Shmuel, we're able to split a pasuk into two. So if you take a look here on the paragraph, Vihine, he says, L'chor tzarech im. He says, I have a problem here. Because the Gemara says that Akari B'Torah requires three psukim minimum. But if there are no three psukim, Rav says we repeat psukim. Shmuel says we cut psukim in half. Im kain, kmo chen beparshas Amolek, havi le lemeimar. Since we only have nine psukim, so according to Rav, we should repeat another pasuk that was said by the previous ola, and then you'll make up the number 10. According to Shmuel, you should take a pasuk, split it into two, and then you'll get the number 10. He says the answer is no. That machlokes between Rav and Shmuel is irrelevant to this case of Amalek. Why? Because in the case of Amalek, we don't need 10 psukim.
Because we repeat the last one twice.
No, what I mean to say is we don't need 3 psukim because the mitzvah is havana. The reason why we need 10. See, Rav and Shmuel are discussing 3 psukim. That's already a shir in Kriya. So if it's a shir in Kriya, then if one of the olim is not going to get 3 psukim, we're in trouble because he needs a kriya, and he didn't do a kriya if he read less than 3 psukim. But in the case of Amalek, we're talking about the requirement of 10 psukim. That's not a requirement in kriya, that's a requirement in havana to understand what's going on. And here, since 9 psukim is enough, we don't have to start cutting up psukim or repeating psukim. We have 9 psukim and they make up an entire thought unit, a curriculum, so we can understand what Amalek is all about, and therefore all we have to do is read the 9 psukim. So I'll read it inside. He says,
he said to teach a woman the offside rule in football, and that's hard.
Okay. Why are we talking about football? I lost the connection here.
You got the 10 people and you got this. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Are there 10 people in football? I don't know.
10 outside footballers, you know.
10 outside footballers. Okay, good. So you're happy then. I mean, 10 is good for football. I think in American football, I think you need more than 10. I don't remember.
Anyway, 300.
Okay, so he says that the shir of kriya v'asar psukim is a takon of shir avinu inyan advarm shal kriya lo mahani mazel adalek. You know, to repeat psukim is not going to help you understand the unit. Or lifsok, or to cut up psukim into smaller segments. At the end of the day, he's only reading 9 psukim. So when we get to the takon of kriyas gimel psukim, which is only a shir in kriya, then we can cut it up and repeat it in any way we want and skip around, so to speak. But when it gets to the asar psukim, we're not going to be able to do this. Now, do you have page shin chav zayin? It should be the second page in your handout. Okay. Now, he quotes the Gemara of Rava. Let's see if we can find the Gemara of Rava. It's also, I think, on Chaf Aleph Amid Aleph. Let's see if we can find it. I need to say Chaf Aleph Amid Beis. Chaf Aleph Amid Beis. Let me see if I can find it before we get too excited about it. Oh, do we find it? Okay, right now I'm sorry I don't find it. But let's just get the general gist of it. When you have 3 aliyahs and you have to achieve 10 psukim, what does that mean by definition?
13.
That one of the 3 people is going to read 4 psukim. He's going to get an extra pasuk. Again, I don't know what that means in football terms, but I'm sure there's something in football that parallels that. Okay. So Rava says that, you know what? If the first fellow who gets an aliyah, he reads 4 psukim, mishubach. That's great. We're going to give him extra brownie points. Now, after he finishes, the Sheni comes up, and he also reads 4 psukim, because he also wanted to get that extra 4th pasuk. He's also mishubach. And the 3rd guy who comes up for the aliyah, he reads 4 psukim, that's also mishubach. In other words, since we have to fill in that extra pasuk, because 3 times 3 is 9, and we got to get to 10, therefore any one of the Korim has a right to grab onto an extra pasuk. Even though, again, the chiddush here is that the first fellow already read the 4 psukim. So the Turi Evan, who lived about 2.5 centuries ago, he was known for his work called the Shakas Arya, he says, I don't understand. How does Rashi know that the Gemara is going to give applaud even the second fellow who takes 4 psukim, and even the 3rd who takes 4 psukim? Ein kan sheva. It doesn't seem that there's such a, you know, we should give him such praise. He says, "Ein kan shemach lemisha kara dalid ela bekara pasuk revi." If the first guy read a 4th pasuk, yoser al give up psukim shetzarach hakori likros, meaning that when the first fellow gets his aliyah, he realizes that we're going to have to add another pasuk. So he's already working within the framework of let's achieve our goal of 10. Meaning if the first fellow reads 4 psukim, the second reads 3, and the 3rd reads 3, then we have 10. But once we get to the second guy, after the first fellow already read 4, if the second guy reads 4, his extra pasuk is not within the framework of 10 psukim. So he's already going to pasuk 11. Why is that laudatory? Shuv ein shevach b'kriya haba achro. If yes, I'll give up psukim, the one who comes second, why does he deserve any sort of yashikoyach for reading more than 3 psukim? His extra pasuk is not within the framework of 10, and we're only trying to shoot for 10. Ulam, he says, lamavur shetakonis asar psukim lahavi shir kriya elkiim takonis yavinu inyan akriya. He says the number 10 is not a magical number of how many psukim have to be read in order to constitute a kriya. It's how many psukim have to be read in order to convey a message that we can understand the unit of the Torah, motif, that has a beginning, a middle, and an end. That's 10 psukim. Therefore, he says, Yesh Revach Beparash Mekorin Yosef Asar Psukim. If you're reading beyond the 10 psukim, Arein Eskayim Inyan Kriyas Asar Psukim Ayidei Kriyas Kol Psukim. V'lachein Korin Es Kulam Kevin Shal Yidei Kulam Mevinim Inyan Aparash Tfei. Ki kol echad shekar dal psukim parasha raisin mishuba. He says, in the light of our understanding that the shir of 10 psukim is in order to understand the parasha, he says, therefore, if you read more than 10 psukim, that's also fine. Because if more than 10 psukim will enhance your ability to understand the parasha, again, you have to see in each case, you know, whether that's so, but in theory, in concept, now that you went beyond the 10 psukim, you enhance the understanding of the parasha that much greater.
So is it a minimum of 10 then? Is that what he was saying?
That's what he was saying here. That if you go beyond 10 psukim, if that enhances your understanding, that's also part of the key, and it embellishes your fulfillment of the
mitzvah. You're on the subject, like you're reading a subject.
Correct, it's a subject.
You wouldn't stop in the middle of the...
Right, it's a subject. It's a total unit with a concept and a subject. Now, the Gemara tells us in Megillah that Breishis B'Shnayim Chamisha Psukim Havi. So that part of Breishis that you have to read on Mamados has 5 Psukim. V'tanya Akori V'toro L'Yifchos Mishlosha Psukim. So as we said before, Rav holds Doleg, that you repeat Psukim to make up the 10, or to make up the 3 Psukim for each Korei. And the Gemara asks, why didn't Rav say posek? Why couldn't Rav accept that we take a posek, like Shmuel says, and split it in half? Because sovar, because Rav holds called psuke de lo paski, Moshe anan lo paskinan. That if Moshe Rabbeinu gave us a full verse, then that's part of the transmission of Torah. We're not allowed to cut it into parts. Do you know about this? We have to be very careful about reading and reciting part psukim. I think on Simchas Torah, when we say Ata Reisa, if I'm not mistaken, I should really research this before I shoot off my mouth, but I think there's certain verses there that are not complete, which is a problem, you know, to read incomplete verses. So the Gemara now asks Shmuel, so how did Shmuel allow you to cut psukim in half? V'amar Rav Chiya Kra, he was the Balkore. Tsar Godol Hoyoli Eitzel Rav Chiya Godol V'lo Hituli Lifsok El Latinoko Shel Beis Raman. He says that it was very hard for me because they insisted that I don't cut up psukim. But he says the only case in which, the only context in which they allowed me to cut up psukim is Latinoko Shel Beis Raman, when you're teaching young children and they can't necessarily comprehend the entire pasuk, so you break it up into smaller pieces. Bless you. And why are you allowed to do so? And the answer is lo efshar. And I was not doing it because you want to cut up psukim, but because that's the only way you could convey and teach the Torah. Hachinami, here too, in the case where you have 5 psukim, you have 3 people reading it, there's no way that they can each read 3 psukim, so therefore we cut up psukim, that's called lo efshar. Then the Gemara asks, and Shmuel, why doesn't he hold doleg? Why couldn't he hold like Rav? Namely, that you repeat psukim, that would have solved the problem in an easy way. So he says, gzeira mishum anechnosim u'mishum hayotzim. Meaning that there are people who come in the middle of kriya, and they may get the mistaken impression that you're calling up less than you're reading less than 3 psukim. They don't realize that you're repeating psukim that were already recited. So I know we're going to have to stop pretty soon, but let's take a quick peek at the paragraph that starts Venira. He says the following: Venira de Rav Sfirle Dafilu Hechim de Lo Efshar Lo Paskina. He says that Rav will not allow you to cut up psukim, even in a case of Lo Efshar. What about Tinoko Shel Beis Raman? There we allowed you to teach less than full psukim, so you recited half a pasuk. He says the following, that what the Gemara means is that Kol Psuke de Lo Paski Moshe Lo Paskinon, we're not allowed to cut up a pasuk of Moshe Rabbeinu, that's part of what we call Kriyas HaTorah, meaning reading the Torah. When we read the Torah, we read full psukim. But here, in the case of Tinoko Shel Beis Raman, our goal is not reading the psukim. Our goal is understanding, that the child should understand the pasuk. And in order to facilitate his ability to understand, you have to cut up psukim, that's not a violation of cutting up psukim, because it's not being done in the context of kriya, of recitation, of reading, but rather it's part of studying the psukim. He writes here in the Gevurah Yitzchak, Ha Hachdina, the Kol Paski de Lepaski Moshe Rabbeinu Nan Lepaskina, and Imze Din Iser Greda, Sha'asa Lahafsik, Bemokim Shalohivsik Moshe, O She'ein Zerak Din Iser Greda, Ki Im She'esh Halacha Bekriyas HaTorah, Shal Hefsek Psukim. We could Amar Rav B'Megilut Af Gimel Amid Be'e Amid Aleph, Maidich Siv, Vayikru, B'Sefer Torah Salokim Mefurash, Shum Seichel V'Yavinu B'Mikra, Vayikru B'Sefer Torah Salokim Zeh Mikra, V'Shum Seichel Eilu Apsukim V'Yavinu B'Mikra Eilu Pisukei Taimim Harei, She'alfinan Mehach Krod Vayikru B'Sefer Torah Salokim V'Shum Seichel She'nemar Halacha B'Kriyas HaTorah Shall kriyas psukim, v'nemer lemoshe misinai ech hapsukim nifsakim. V'al zeh ba'a takona shein pochsin mikriyas shlosha psukim. Imkein kol she posak v'mokim shalo posak moshe lo mikri posuk v'lo mekayim hachdin de kriyas gimel psukim. V'hine agmara parach al shmuel she sover posak de reb chiyah agoro lo hitil reb chiyah kra Lifsok, Litinokos, Vesraven, El Bishvil, Lislamid, Asuyin, Vehine, Rabbi Chia, Kora, Rechekra, he was the Balkori, Lohoya Kori, Vatora, Lakai, Vitzis, Kriyas, Hatora, Rakshahim, Alamdim, Torah Shvichsav. He was teaching Torah Shvichsav to the children, Lohoya Shom, Nidon, Shalkiyim, Kriya, Ella, Shal Isa, Greda. Ukalishna the Gemara v'lo hiterli lifsog v'nir mizek kol adin to kol psuka do paski moshe lo paskinan eno el adin isa greda chen nira de bemes zel yisod plutas rav ushmuel de shmuel asover posek sover de kol adin she kol psuka do paski moshe lo paskinan eno el adin isa greda and v'mokim do lo efshar hitiru Mishmachi sover tehechadlo efsha bekriyas haTorah gamkein posek ulam rav sover the kol paskidlo paski moshe lo paskino neinu katin shal isur ki im yesh halacha bekriyas haTorah shal pisuk psukim bechol paskidlo paskino moshe lo chashit pasuk ulahachi sover the afgadlo efsha ein lifsog v'lo dami le Rabbi Chia de Kora, she posuk b'makom de lo efsha, de sham hayirak nidon shel iser shapir hiter lo came de lo efsha b'kriyas haTorah heichad de lo paskin and Moshe is lo nemar sham din pisuk v'lo choshev pisuk v'lo mikri kiyum kriyas psukim lachein bal korchach doleg. So mirtz Hashem, next time we'll talk more about kriyas haTorah, about kriyas haftorah. We'll try to get an insight into the Asar Psukim and the Gimel Kruim, and we'll talk about different dimensions of Kriyas HaTorah.